to the Extra Magic Hour, a Disney Parks podcast. Here are your hosts, Anne Ravanos and Dimitri Ravanos.
Welcome to another edition of the Extra Magic Hour. I am Dimitri.
And I'm Kat.
With schedules this week, we just could not work things out with Anne, so you have just the two of us this week. Dan Cisneros, author of the new book Disney Tale of the Tape, Theme Park Boxing, will join me for an interview a little bit later on in the show. But right now, Kat, let's jump into the news.
Okay, sounds good. So I'm sure everybody has heard, possibly not seen, but that there was a social media moms conference live event to see live preview to see Rivers of Light at Disney's Animal Kingdom last night. Mm-hmm. There's still no opening date, but there was a video that was put out there. Not great quality, but I think it's still very interesting in that people should go see it and let us know what your initial thoughts are. Did you see it, Dimitri?
I didn't, only because Anne told me it's a bit of a time investment, and I was a little bit busy today. I am definitely going to take a peek at it here in the next day or so, though. Let me ask you this, since obviously I don't have an educated opinion on it, because I saw you and Anne go back and forth on Facebook that you watched it, or at least watched a little bit of it. Does the show at least look complete now, or are you still seeing what we were talking about a few weeks ago of there are big chunks where obviously there's supposed to be more there than is working?
Honestly, I feel like I would need to watch it again. Mm-hmm. I only watched it this morning as I was, well, I was done getting ready for work, but I was like waiting to leave for work.
Right.
I'll tell you, I loved the music. Uh-huh. It was great, but I was a little bit bored. And I think that if I had like a bigger perspective, like the camera just kept it at like one angle,
right,
basically. And I know that there were two like boats, but like you couldn't really see the boats at all. And so I was wondering what was happening on the boats. And then when you did see the boats, they weren't like, you couldn't see the dancers on it. So like it just kind of looked like people just like wobbling around.
I can't remember who the name of the lead guy was on this project, but his title within the company is it's something like head of shows, I think, is the first part, but it's like shows and spectaculars is the other is the other name in there. He's the same guy that did World of Color. And I think did the update to Illuminations. I could be wrong about that part. I know for sure he did World of Color. But he sort of has this reputation for putting together these shows where you have to be in a specific spot in the crowd to get the full show. So I can see how, that being the case, it would be very tough to determine whether or not this is a good show based on one social media video.
Yeah, and like some of the effects were really cool, like when all the flowers like open up and spray out water. Mm-hmm. I think that was really cool. It probably is simple to some people, but to me, I thought it was really cool when the water was pink. And then I think it was a couple of weeks we talked about the color of the water, since this is like real water and
right.
I think it still looked really good, but just overall, the show was just a tad boring. And Anne's right, it was very time consuming.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe if like you're actually there and not like doing anything else, it would be better. Kind of like Fantasmic for me, I can't watch that online. I can only watch it in person.
Yeah, it's because it is so long too, there is this kind of hesitation, I don't know what the right word is, maybe just concern is the right word, in the company that you're not really going to be able to do two shows a night with this, because of A, its runtime, and B, how long you're going to have to charge these GPS coordinate barges for each show. And so does the fact of where the amphitheater is located in relation to the entrances to Pandora, does that mean that you're going to be missing out on the opportunity to get those people to stay in the park just a little bit longer to see the show if you cannot run it a second time?
True.
And you brought up, too, that it was a little bit boring. You know, that is the concern that we've been hearing for so long. I think it was who's the head of the company? His name went out. Bob Iger, yeah. I think it was Iger at one point said that the first time he saw it, he said, we have a beautiful show. We do not have an interesting show. Or we don't have an entertaining show, something like
that. Yes, that is exactly it. Because there are a lot of things like that were so cool. Like they have the animal floats that are awesome. There's like turtles, and if anybody knows me, they know I love turtles. And they show turtles throughout the whole thing. And so like I thought that was really cool. They also have these really cool elephants and owls, and like I think those floats are so pretty. But yes, beautiful show, boring show.
All right, what else is in the news?
The next thing also came out yesterday. They have announced the official opening date of Pandora, and then the official opening year for Star Wars Land.
So I actually was so shocked by the year they gave for Star Wars Land, which is 2019, that I didn't even see the news about Pandora.
Oh, really? Because I saw the news about Pandora before I saw Star Wars.
Okay, so what is the date?
But they were like one after. So the day on Pandora is May 27th, which is the Saturday of Memorial Day weekend, which is kind of what we guessed. And then, like you said, Star Wars is opening 2019.
So there is probably a good chance that if you have a trip planned for maybe mid-April, there's probably a good chance you're going to get in to see some of Pandora at that point, and then they'll do the grand opening celebration that weekend. They'll, you know, run it a little bit to work all the kinks out. The other thing, and I don't know if you have this in the news, do you have the news about the media event?
No.
Okay, so there is a media event in which the plan is to, it's a 7-day media event, and the plan is that the media will see something different every day. So maybe one day you'll see Pandora, and the next day there'll be a media showing of Rivers of Light. And maybe the next day they'll take you over to the construction site for Toy Story and Star Wars, stuff like that. So there is the very real possibility that guests could start getting in to see Pandora as early as this media event in March.
That'll be awesome.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's, I guess it's all going to depend largely on how much Disney feels like they have righted on Pandora. And I would bet it's a lot, right? I mean, like, if they want to have a month and a half to 2 months to tinker to make sure it's ready for the grand opening to the public, it would make a lot of sense to go ahead and open it late March.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. Also, this media event actually overlaps with Universal's media event for Volcano Bay. So there is some concern.
Competition.
Yeah, well, and there's concern also that Disney better have some great stuff to show, because we are probably going to get some leaks about Nintendo Land at Universal.
Oh, yeah.
And Disney's going to have to compete with that.
I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. All right, what else is in the news?
So the next thing is that the Disney company has reported its quarterly earnings report. They reported that yesterday, and that ended on December 31st. So I guess that was like September to December?
Right.
Is that right? Okay. So it's kind of like last quarter, where the revenues increased, but the attendance fell again. And the Disney park is saying that it was because of unfavorable conditions, including Hurricane Matthew, and that was estimated to account for 4% of the drop.
Hmm. I would guess that there's probably some, I don't know what the right way to say this is, I guess fear-related canceling as well. People canceling in the wake of the Orlando nightclub shooting.
Yes.
Probably also canceling in the wake of the alligator attack. That does not account for every bit of the drop. You know, the other thing Disney at some point is going to have to acknowledge is that they are going after fewer people with more money now. I mean, that's just plain to see to anybody that pays attention.
Yes, I agree. I think it's interesting, and I was reading like the comments on this thread, and somebody was like, I wonder if Disney has finally hit that point where they're not going to raise the ticket prices or like some prices for other stuff for like maybe one quarter or like two quarters, because usually don't they raise them like every couple of quarters?
Is it every quarter? I thought it was every year they do a raise in ticket price. It might be every couple of quarters. I guess that makes sense. Two ticket price raises a year.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess it's possible, but also don't you think that they are going to, Well, no, I guess probably they would try and keep ticket prices close to in line with where they are now for the opening of Pandora and then for the opening of Toy Story and Star Wars to, you know, like any good drug dealer, get you hooked on the product and then have you coming back for more.
Yes.
At higher prices.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I guess that makes sense. I don't think it's a coincidence, though, that we get an announcement of the opening dates of three brand new lands right as they also have to release news that attendance is falling there.
You know what? That's very true. I didn't think about that.
I think that is... I think pretty clearly you can connect the dots one to the other. I don't know that this strategy that Disney has, and you know, I think we both agree the strategy obviously is going after fewer people with more money. I don't know that it's awful for the company. I just think they need to figure out a way to tell that story. And I think you and I have talked about this before when we do, is the name of our game Moral Conundrum?
I think so.
It's been a while since we've played. I've already forgotten.
Yeah.
but they are a victim of kind of their own PR now, right? Where Disney, of all places, Disney World, which is a rite of passage of so many childhood vacations, cannot come out and say we're not interested in everybody anymore. But that strategy clearly is paying off for them. Attendance is down, but revenue is fine.
Yeah. I don't know.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, like, I know when doing a lot of quotes, people, so I know a lot of the travel agents in my agency, people give them, like, a budget, and it's just kind of hard because a lot of people who want to stay in that budget also want to stay in the monorail loop.
Of course.
or, I don't know, and it's just hard to tell them the reality of... Good luck with that. You're not going to get it through me.
Right. So let me ask you a question. Are you seeing, or are people in your company seeing more people walk away rather than say, I'll adjust my budget? Or, I mean, are you more likely to see, I'll adjust my expectations down versus adjust my budget up?
So I haven't had any... I've had people walk away, but there is one exception. A friend of mine, when I told her what her quote was, she was like, wow, that's less expensive than I thought. And I was like, okay, great.
Yeah, I think that people that have never been or have not been in a long, long time, the reputation is out there of everything at Disney World is expensive, and if you don't have anything to gauge it by, maybe it is possible that you expect a night at one of the monorail resorts to cost you $1,000 or $1,500 a night, and you're surprised when it doesn't.
Right.
Yeah. All right. Well, I mean, look, again, attendance falling, but revenue is fine. I hate to sound like our president, but the media will latch on to the bad news when really the only news that matters to Disney is the revenue is fine.
Right.
Yeah. All right. What else is in the news?
So this one is kind of interesting. So there was a new study by I meant to look up what this is. It's MBLM. And I'm trying to find out what it's called. I don't know. It's basically... the brand intimacy agency, and Disney has been named the most intimate brand among millennials. So basically what brand intimacy means is that the emotional connection between consumers and brands, as well as the character and strength of the bond, this is all quote, by the way, and then looked at the nostalgia consumers have for the brand and how their brand exceeds consumer expectation. So Disney is number one. Last year was number six, and it jumped to number one this year. But when I was reading what they looked at, when it says the nostalgia consumers have for a brand, like, I was like, well, duh, Disney is up there.
Because
the kids who grew up in the 90s, I mean, that was all there was just Disney. There wasn't DreamWorks. There was
right.
yet. There was 20th Century Fox, but with Don Bluth, but he only came out with movies like every 2 or 3 years, where Disney came out with a movie every year, and they're still doing that.
And also, you know, I was I'm just thinking back to Don. I'm trying to think back to when. I guess Don Bluth got started with An American Tale, right? I mean, that was kind of the first big. And, you know, those never really had staying power. Like, those weren't like you go see it at the movie and then movies and then immediately rush out to buy it on VHS. The way where, like, and I know people like you and me and our families and probably most of the families of the people listening, our families knew the date that those Disney movies were coming out on VHS. But I think it extends beyond just people that are that kind of fans of Disney. I think most people knew the dates that Disney movies were coming out on VHS.
Right.
And also, I think you have to remember, too, that millennials, which I think I actually technically am in the high end of, I'm on the far end of being a millennial, I'm trying to do the math here in my head. I think that they are the first generation, we are the first generation, to completely grow up with the Disney store, right? To completely grow up with Disney just pushing the pedal to the floor on merchandising.
Yeah. Actually, Disney store is celebrating their 30th anniversary this year.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, I'm going to be 36 this year, so I obviously the Disney store has been with me way longer than it has not.
Yes.
All right. Do we have a rumor this week?
We do. So there is a rumor about Club Villain. Now, if you guys don't know what Club Villain is, it's like one of those extra paid party events at Hollywood Studios.
Uh-huh.
But they don't have they have only specific dates, and it's not really offered throughout the year. It's just kind of random. I don't even know what the current dates are that are offered because they don't advertise a lot about it. But anyway, going on. There's a rumor that Club Villain is going to appear at a non-park location. So
really?
It wouldn't require park admission. So then that would save you money for park admission. And although there's no official location, somebody on this thread was thinking Disney Springs because it could bring a different crowd there, not just shoppers, but then also you could also still have your Disney people there, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, that does make sense, and I guess that is a strong possibility. I also wonder, would it go to... I'm trying to think if there's one that makes sense. I wonder if it would go to a hotel, perhaps.
Oh, I didn't even think about that.
But now that I say that, I don't. Maybe the boardwalk.
Maybe a building in the boardwalk.
Yeah, but I don't know where it makes sense. I mean, Disney Springs makes the most sense. I wonder if they would put it on the stage out in front of World of Disney, or if they would build it its own venue.
I feel like it would have to go into its own venue, because if it's in the stage in front of World of Disney, then you wouldn't have to pay to.
True. Yeah. I didn't think about that. Also, think about the foot traffic problems that creates.
Yes.
Right there.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So I guess I kind of misunderstood and did not realize that this would be still a hard ticket event, just not one that you have to then be in the park for.
Right.
All right. Well, there you go. There's our news. There's our rumor for the week. We have an interview coming up, so stick around inside the Extra Magic Hour.
Hey, everyone. It's Kat. We all know planning a Walt Disney World vacation takes a lot of time and effort. You gotta choose a resort, book dining, and choose fast passes. Well, I want to take the stress out of your vacation. Book your vacation with me through Magical Travel, and your trip planning will become as easy as pie. I'll take care of all the fine details for you at no additional cost. What's great about it is that you won't have to wake up early to get those hard-to-book reservations like Be Our Guest or Cinderella's Royal Table. I'll do my best to make your vacation the most fun and relaxing it can be. Even better, when you book a trip with me, I'll throw in a Disney gift card for you. Email me for a free quote at katarina@magicaltravel.com. That's KATARINA @magicaltravel.com. P.S. I also do all other Disney affiliates, so if you want to venture outside of the world, I will be able to help you there too. So what are you waiting for? Let's make your next trip magical.
Hello, I'm Storybook Julius, the White Dragon Podcast Network's resident Canadian and the host of Storybook Radio, a Walt Disney World and Universal Studios podcast appearing every Wednesday here on WDPN. Walt Disney was a storyteller, and well, so am I. Now, I'm not saying that I'm as cool as Walt Disney or anything, but I'm saying that if you're looking for a unique take on the Walt Disney World and Universal Studios theme parks, with immersive looks at their stories, backstories, and histories, you've come to the right place. Head on over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Podomatic to subscribe to and download the Storybook Radio podcast each and every Wednesday. You can also check out www.storybookradio.com for more details and more content.
All right, so our interview this week is with Dan Cisneros. Now, maybe you've seen his blog, Disney Fountain of Youth. Maybe you know him as a boxing judge, which he has been for a number of years, but he's got a brand new book out right now called Disney Tale of the Tape, Theme Park Boxing. Dan, first of all, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Dimitri. It's my pleasure.
So let me ask you this. How did the book come to be? Because certainly you're a Disney fan, and anybody that's ever looked at your blog knows that. And the idea of taking boxing's Tale of the Tape and putting it in other settings has been around forever and ever. But is this the kind of thing that you and friends have talked about before? Is this the kind of thing that you always knew would be fun? Or did this idea come to you? Did someone approach you with this idea?
Yeah, actually, it kind of just fell into my lap. I just out of nowhere, I was invited to write a column for an old website called Disney Dispatch. And the guy that created that was Bob McLean. And he is now the publisher of Theme Park Press.
Right.
But at the time, he wasn't a publisher. He was just doing the website. And he approached me about it. He found me through my blog, actually, through the Disney Fountain of Youth blog, and he saw that I was a boxing judge, and I guess he was kind of looking for something a little different, and he contacted me, and he asked me about, you know, doing a column, and you know, he said, how about matching up Disney experiences, and we'll put them, you know, in a boxing match, and I thought, yeah, you know what, that sounds kind of fun, so I started with the column, and then that website went away. I think he sold it. It kind of died out, so that was the end of that. So, and then a few years later, I had just retired from the Postal Service, and I get an email from Bob McLean, and he said, remember you wrote that column for me? He said, how would you like to write a book about it based on the column? And it just blew me away. It just, you know, I didn't know what to say. I had never written a book. I had written articles for a boxing publication many years ago, but nothing like a book. And so I said, yeah, let's give it a shot. So that's how the book came to be.
Is it one of those things, because you talk about having written columns but never done a book before, is it one of those things where, you know, like the old saying of how do you eat a Cadillac? Well, you grind it up in one spoon at a time. I mean, is it one of those things where you had to think about one matchup at a time before you could wrap your head around the whole project? I mean, certainly you had written these articles before, or is there just that mental block of the difference between a column and a book that you didn't know you were capable of doing a full book until the book was done?
Oh, well, definitely. The thought of doing a book kind of scared me a little bit. When I wrote for the boxing magazine, it was more of a reporting type thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, I would pretty much just report the results out of New Mexico, Texas, Colorado, and I would send it in, and they would, you know, publish it. So there wasn't a lot of creativity to that. But the book, as far as the column, I started out writing it like I did the column. And in the column, there was only one judge. It was me.
Right.
I was the judge, and it would just be my ideas, you know, for each round, for each category of each attraction. And I would make up two fictitious judges, you know, with silly names, and that was that's how we would get a scorecard. But as I started the book, I started to realize that it would be a lot more fun for Disney fans if we had real Disney experts.
Right.
So, you know, I reached out to my friend Len Testa, who is the co-author of The Unofficial Guide to Walt Disney World.
Yes, our friend here too.
Yes. He's a great guy, and he's a great boxing fan, so we hit it off really well. So that was a perfect fit. And originally, he was just going to write the foreword for me. But as the book evolved, you know, the format, I thought about, let's have some celebrity judges. So I started reaching out to people in the Disney fan community, and Len said he would love to be a judge. And before you knew it, I had all these, you know, authors and bloggers and YouTube people, and just before I knew it, I had all my judges. And so it kind of evolved into that. It, you know, it started off as just a simple little format based on the column, but it took off, and it evolved into what I think has turned out to be a pretty fun book.
Well, and that's sort of where my next question was coming from, because if you go to the Disney Fountain of Youth blog, you can see there's a list of a number of the judges that Dan involved in the project. You have both Disney bloggers and then actual boxing judges. Did you find that they approached these matchups in different ways?
Yeah, actually, you know, as far as the boxing judges, I was surprised, because I mentioned somehow to one of my friends who is a boxing judge in Indiana, Nathan Palmer, and he, you know, I didn't even know that he was a Disney fan. It turned out he was a big Disney fan, and so I thought, hey, you know, that he really knows a lot about Disney. He's been there a lot of times, so I asked him about it, and he said, okay. And then he recommended a gentleman that he knew who is also a boxing judge, and this guy was a boxing judge for 37 years, and okay, I judged over 100 pro fights in my 10 years as a boxing judge. This guy judged over 1,600 fights.
Wow.
Yeah, and he did world title fights, and he's been to Disney World over 50 times, so Nathan put me in touch with him, and he said yes. So I had my two real boxing judges. Another guy is Zach Young. He's from California. He's also a referee and a judge, and he did one fight as a judge. But, yeah, it's funny how they kind of, especially Nathan, he looked at it when he would write his scorecards, and you know, each judge gives their thoughts on each category. Each category is one round. So, like, the cue would be one round, and then the theme of the ride is one round. And Nathan would approach it, you know, in his lingo, I could see the boxing judge coming out in him, whereas the Disney people were more looking at it as, you know, attraction versus attraction. And so that was a lot of fun to see that happen.
So is it one of those, I guess just sort of a follow-up question, was it a situation of where the people that were the entrenched Disney bloggers, YouTubers, whatever, did you find that it seemed like they had their minds made up as soon as they heard what the matchup was?
Oh, no, I don't think so. They may have, but I didn't sense that. Because, you know, it each round is individual, so it's each category, and it was really a lot of fun to hear the thoughts of you know, all the judges.
Right.
And when I was putting the book together, and they would send their scorecard back, and I would read this stuff, and I would just, it just blew me away. I mean, there's a lot of things that I had no idea. They mentioned different things for each round that I don't think they had a winner in mind.
Uh-huh.
I think he just, you know, as I've got a feeling, if they're anything like myself, as the fight went along, before they knew it, they had to add the score up at the end of the battle to see who they had as the winner, because I had to do that a few times.
So tell me a little bit about the process of writing the book. Did you lay out each matchup before you started soliciting opinions from your judges? Basically, I guess the question is, how long of a process was this in terms of providing the matchup, writing up each round, getting the scores back from your judges, to finally getting it ready to go to publishing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it took me about close to 6 months to to get it all put together. Yeah, it was a process step by step, and I had to, you know, I just try to think up a good matchup in my head. And, you know, like I say, there's it's not just attractions. There's different rooms at resorts, different snacks, even the music, American music machine against British Revolution. And so, you know, I had to just try to think of some good matchups that I thought would be a good matchup. And then I did a lot of research, you know, trying to make sure that I had it right. I had Jim Hill help me out on this a little bit, and I would reach out to him, and he would respond back. And Len, of course, was helpful. And so I would, you know, get a little bit of information to set the match up. And then I would think of the categories, and I would send them by email to my judges.
Yeah,
and they would you know, write up who they thought won each round and send it back. So it was kind of a slow process, because I had to, when I would send out this, you know, the request for scorecards, sometimes it would take a while to get them back from the judges, and I had to, like, kind of be on them all the time, and I didn't want to keep bugging them, but I was so anxious to get in there and get the book, you know, put together. So it was a kind of a long process, but it was really a fun process. I mean, the book has not only been, you know, a blessing as far as just to be able to write a book, that's really great, but to meet these wonderful people. I mean, I've made new friends, my judges and people in the book. I even used real boxing referees just for color, you know, and ring announcers. But to meet these people and to have them, you know, to start to correspond with them and become friends, that's really been one of the best parts of the whole project.
Well, so you've made friends. Have you made, whether you would call it enemies or critics, have you heard blowback from people reading the book that can't believe a certain attraction won a certain matchup?
No, I don't think I've had anything really negative. when I did the column, I did have a few people say that they disagreed with the decision, you know, but it was all in fun, you know, so... just like real boxing, you have to have a little bit of a thick skin, but it hasn't been that way with the Disney community. Thank goodness. They've really taken it the way it's meant to be, as all in fun, you know?
Yeah, and I guess that brings up a really good question. Is being such an active part of the Disney community, both the book, but long before that with the blog, even before the column with the blog, was that sort of like a nice anecdote or a nice antidote or a nice change of pace from the boxing community where things are not only you have to have a thick skin, but things can get really aggressive at times. Maybe not with you, but with what you're watching. Is Disney just, was the appeal that it was such a change of pace from what your professional life was?
Oh, yeah. Because when you're sitting in a, you know, judging a fight, a boxing match in an arena, and you've got, fans that are, you know, for one side or the other, you know that no matter how you come up with your decision, so, you know, half the arena is not going to like you.
Right.
So that can get pretty tense, you know. But with the Disney community, I mean, they're just as fervent. You know, they really like their favorite attractions, and I'm sure they're really rooting for their side, and they have their own opinions. They're very opinionated.
Right.
But it's much easier because it's, you know, it's at a distance. I mean, I'm not recognized at Disney World and have someone come up and say, hey, you know, you picked Space Mountain over, you know.
Sure.
I don't have to worry about that. So that's been a lot of fun. It's very different. But yeah, the Disney fans are really passionate about what they like, and I understand that completely because I have my favorites too.
It's going to be interesting as this book gets a little bit older and as it spreads a little bit more and more into the Disney community. It's always interesting to me to see the reaction of East Coast versus West Coast Disney fans. That makes it sound like a rap battle, but you understand what I mean in terms of how vastly different the same attraction is at two different parks and where your memories and your emotions lie.
Oh, yeah. You know, that was part of one of the tough parts of the book, too, was finding judges that had been to both Disney World and Disneyland.
Right.
You know, I just assumed in my head, because I grew up in Southern California and been to Disneyland, I can't count the times, and then I've been to Disney World now so many times. I don't know. In my mind, I don't know why I was naive, I guess. I assumed that everybody had been to both.
Well,
and as I reached out, even to some of these, you know, Disney experts,
mm-hmm.
Dimitri, even that some of them, I was surprised that a lot of them said, I've never been to Disneyland or I've never been to Disney World. It really shocked me.
Right. And it's because it's not just you're looking for somebody that has been to both. You have to have somebody that has been to both each enough times to fairly judge, you know, and I guess the one that comes to mind right away is like the Haunted Mansion. Those are two different attractions depending on
exactly
which park you're in. You have to have been to each park and ridden each ride enough times to fairly judge which one you like better.
Exactly. Yeah. It wasn't just a matter of having been there, but having also experienced these different attractions and snacks and whatever, you know.
Yeah.
So it got tough, but I did find some great judges that had done both, and I had, you know, thank goodness. I mean, a couple of the matches, there was just one judge out of the whole bunch that could do them, and they got it done for me. So that was really good. Actually, there's a lot of matches that didn't even make it into the book because I just couldn't find the right judges to match it up. But I'm working on that too, and hopefully there'll be a volume 2 coming out later. Hopefully later this year.
Ah, very good. Well, keep my email address and my phone number. I'd love to be involved in the next go round.
Exactly.
For sure. So tell me, in all the time you've been writing in this style about Disney, have you found that there is a debate that park fans like to have more than any other? I mean, my guess is it's something very simple like land versus world, but is there one that I'm maybe not thinking of?
I think the one I've heard most is land versus world. And it usually comes down to a Disneyland versus the Magic Kingdom, you know, battle of the parks, because
right,
they are so similar. And that's the one I seem to have heard the most, mostly just people asking me, which do you like better?
Yeah.
And, you know, that's like, you know, which is your favorite kid? You know, you just you love them both and you just can't really pick.
You know, it's weird. It is sort of like your favorite kid, but also I think that answer is going to be very different based on what you value about your vacation, right? Like there's a certain relaxation level of being in Disneyland that you just don't get at Disney World because there's so much to do and you only have a certain amount of time to do it all. Whereas I feel like land, you can relax and take in the history and the sights of it all a little bit better.
Yeah, that's true, because you can have, if you take a week vacation at the Disneyland Resort, you know, you can have a couple of days in each park and right. really go at a slower pace and take your time. But then again, there's so much more to explore in Walt Disney World, of course, you know, 43 square miles of Disney. That's just a paradise for Disney fans.
Sure. The way I paint that example to friends and family members that maybe aren't into the parks the way my wife and my sister and I are is that, you know, we run the Run Disney races. And when you run a half marathon in Disney World, you're never off property. When you run one at Disneyland, you're off property after mile three. You know, I mean, the majority of the race is out in the city of Anaheim because the property's just not that big.
Right, exactly. Exactly. So they're very different, but they're both so much fun. And, of course, the history of Disneyland is, you know, practically unbeatable to think that Walt Disney himself was actually, you know, there walking the park, you know, thinking about things and just actually having an apartment there above the firehouse. You know, that's hard to beat. But then when you think about his dream of Walt Disney World that, you know, he never got to see, you know, come to life, but he in his mind he saw it, that also is, you know, they both in their own way have a really special – it's a really special thing.
As you talk about the history of the parks, it makes me wonder if whether it is the second version, the second edition of this series, or maybe a later edition, would you start to include Disney Parks legends in this, or is it more fun to keep it abstract than to do actual people?
Oh, do you mean the actual, like the Imagineers and such?
Right.
You know, that's the first time I've heard of that. That's a good thought. I hadn't really thought of that.
Like Joe Rohde versus Marty Sklar is just begging to happen, I think.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Tony Baxter and Joe Rohde going six rounds? Oh, man, sign me up. Get me a ringside seat. That's a great idea. I hadn't thought of that. I don't know if I'm qualified to tackle that, but I know some of my judges are.
Yeah,
that'd be something else, Dimitri. I think that's a great idea. I hadn't thought of it.
So I'll let you go on this, a little chance to sell the book a bit. Explain to me how it's set up. I mean, is this set up sort of like a, you know, since this is a whole boxing metaphor, we'll go with is it set up similar to Golden Gloves where it's a continuing tournament, or is it a series of individual matchups?
Oh, no, it's pretty much a series of individual matchups. The way I look at this book is like a boxing, like a card, an event that you would have on one night, a special pay-per-view event, you know, that I guess this would be pay-per-read, but it would be like a pay-per-view, and you got your main events, and you got a couple of undercard bouts, and there's 14 bouts in the book, and like I said, it's got rides, it's got snacks, you know, Big Thunder Mountain versus the Matterhorn, the Dole Whip against Mickey's Premium Ice Cream Bar, the Dinosaur Ride at Animal Kingdom taking on the Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh at the Magic Kingdom. So there's a lot of different, even Prince Charming's Regal Carousel taking on Stitch's Great Escape. Now, you can't have two more different styles, but you know, I thought that's actually the last bout in the book, and that's like the curtain closer, you know, because after your main event in a real boxing event, usually you'll have a curtain closer, a smaller, lesser fight after the big fight's over to give the crowd a chance to disperse.
Sure.
And that's what we had with that one, and that turned out to be a pretty good battle.
That one actually sounds like the early days of MMA when the events were held at like abandoned fairground, like unused fairground facilities where the last fight of the night would be this elite 160-pound guy versus a 400-pound monster.
Yes, exactly. That's the way I picture it, too, and it's kind of the way it turned out. It's quite a battle.
Well, again, the name of the book is Disney Tale of the Tape. Dan Cisneros, the author, has been with me today. Our pal Lynn Testa wrote the foreword to the book. You can get it on Amazon.com. Dan, thanks so much for taking the time, man.
Oh, Dimitri, I'm honored to be here, and I'm glad I found your podcast, too. I was taking a listen, and it's really good, and I just thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
WDPN listeners, this is Allie Eibler from the Geek Watchtower. And as you know, we live in the golden age of geek culture. With all the movies, television shows, comic books, video games encompassing the world of geekdom, it can be a real chore to keep up with all of it. Well, here on the White Dragon Podcast Network, we have a little something called the Geek Watchtower. Kevin Kessler, Chris Doherty, and I run down the latest geek news items every Friday morning for you, before we focus on a fandom feature topic of the week. We're talking about everything from Batman to the Avengers, anime, Doctor Who, Disney, Nintendo, and so much more. So make sure you join Kevin, Chris, and I every Friday morning in the Geek Watchtower, where we monitor all the things that geeks watch. Find it on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and of course at WhiteDragonPodcastNetwork.com.
Hey folks, Kevin Kessler from the White Dragon Podcast Network here. And one of the questions I get asked all the time is, Kevin, I want to have a podcast, but I have no idea what I'm doing. I don't know anything about audio equipment. I don't know anything about editing. I don't know anything about how to post and promote a podcast. Well, folks, you are in luck, because what if I told you there is a way you can have your podcast with minimal effort from you and still be a part of the White Dragon Podcast Network, joining the family of 9 all-star podcasts that are already broadcasting 7 days a week here on WDPN. For a free consultation, please send an email to kevin@whitedragonpodcastnetwork.com, and I will tell you personally how we can take care of everything from the production to the editing to the posting to the server space to promotion of your podcast. I want to welcome you into the White Dragon Podcast Network family, so please drop me a line, kevin@whitedragonpodcastnetwork.com. I look forward to welcoming you into the White Dragon Podcast Network.
The Extra Magic Hour is just about over.
Aww.
But first, it's time for the glorious 3-hour finale.
All right, so before we go today, we thought we'd sneak in one more rumor, because it appears, look, every ride goes through routine maintenance, but it appears that one of the Magic Kingdom's most popular attractions might be getting more than just regular routine maintenance. What do you have, Kat?
So this guy posted on the Diz boards that he just got back from a Disney vacation, and he overheard a Splash Mountain cast member telling another guest that Splash Mountain was closing down for 6 months. Don't know, he doesn't hear if there was like a huge refurbishment or not, or like a total like overhaul, but it's supposed to close just after 4th of July to almost Christmas.
Wow, that's that. Well, I mean, look, I know that Disney technically doesn't consider that peak season, but that is still in the middle of those late summer vacations.
Yeah, so one of the moderators of the Diz boards even commented that he would be really surprised if it was true, because they just had a big refurb a couple years ago, and this is still during the summer months, and the attraction is very, very popular. I mean, it's something to cool you down during those months. So usually when Splash Mountain has a big refurb, it's still going to close in January.
Right. Right, yeah. So I guess the only thing that this could be is if you're doing a major overhaul. Well, there are two things this could be. One, if you're doing a major overhaul and repairing all of the animatronics that have been broken for so long. That's one. And the other is, I think, the one we all assume is going to happen, that is Guardians of the Galaxy is going into Splash Mountain. Mark it down. Demetrius predicted it right here.
Okay, yes. Marvel is going into the Magic Kingdom.
I don't know that I believe this, just because, like, I had not thought about what you just said, which is, even in years that there have been major overhauls or major refurbs of Splash Mountain, it still closes in January anyway.
Yeah.
And also, we've seen supposed major refurbs come off the board, right? Like, last year, there was supposed to be a huge refurbishment coming to Thunder Mountain, and that never happened.
Yes. Yeah, because that was supposed to be a 6-month. And it was only like 3 months or something.
Right.
Which is still pretty big, but
it was supposed to, essentially the Thunder Mountain refurb was supposed to bring it more in line with Disneyland's version, which has a more kind of explosive finale. And it really, like, that little extra touch does make the Thunder Mountain in Disneyland that much better of a ride. I don't know what there is to add to Splash Mountain.
I don't know either. And honestly, like, Splash Mountain is such I don't know. It's one of my favorite rides. I can't decide what's my favorite ride at Disney World. But, I mean, the song is so good. The nostalgia is good. I know it came from an awful movie, but, like, it's just one of those rides that I feel like should never change. And I know, Dimitri, you're all about getting things to change and looking towards the future, but I just feel like that is one of those things that can't.
Well, I'm all for change and moving forward when it needs it. I don't think Splash Mountain needs it necessarily.
Yeah.
Like, at the end of the day, Splash Mountain is still just a log flume, right? It's just a dressed up log flume. And as far as log flumes go, you're not going to get much better except for probably Jurassic Park. You know, I mean, I'm talking about log flumes across the world.
Yeah, I've never ridden Jurassic Park, but I'll take your word for it.
I actually have not either. I just I just know that when that first opened, the animatronics were supposed to be mind-blowing.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. All right, Kat. Well, I guess that will do it for us this week.
Bye!